It's our first episode of the year, and I wanted to start out by saying thank you to everybody who takes time to tune in and listen, whether it's one or two episodes, or whether you've listened to every single episode I've put out starting in July. It has been a really fun project so far, and I can't wait to see where it goes as we keep working on new ideas and new episodes. And I do have one ask. If you enjoy this show, I would really love if you would leave a review. It helps boost visibility of the show, and it just gives me a feel for what you all are liking about the show so I can continue to move in directions that you find interesting as listeners. And it's really just a boost for me as well to keep this project going. I really enjoy it, but it's always great to know that other people are enjoying it. So if you could do that either on Facebook or on Apple Podcasts, that would be great. Today's episode is an interview with musician Brother Yusuf, who many of you may be familiar with as the Fatback Blues Man, and I can't think of a better day to have this episode drop live to you than on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, because what we're talking about is at the heart of what Martin Luther King Jr. Day is about. It's about the Black experience and the struggle of being Black in America, and how blues music is that story of not just the struggle, but of the healing of Black people and the joy of expressing Black experience, whether that is the power of political representation and struggle, or whether that's representation of the horrors of the past and how Black people have persevered through that and innovated to create a music that has gone on to influence every genre of popular music today. Brother Yusuf is particularly adept at explaining not just how blues music is powerful as a music, but how it has affected his life, his community, and why it's important to bring race into blues and into conversation with the people who listen to blues music, especially as blues music has become more and more white, and we see more white artists headlining and getting recognition, while many of the Black innovators of this music of the past and of today are often overlooked. I want you to keep an open mind. If something in this interview challenges you, I want you to sit with it. This is something that should strike you as a familiar narrative, but I think we want to push past the familiar into progress toward more representation, toward more activism in our local communities, as well as our regional and national communities. How can we both honor the music in the past and push forward to the future so that we can be more united and better allies to each other across race? With that said, I'm Dr. Chelsea Adams, and this is 12 Bar Talk. Brother Yusuf, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate this.
Thanks for coming on. I'm excited to have you. I just wanted to jump right in here and say first that I know that many of my listeners listen to your music, have danced live to it, and we love to listen to you and your sound. And I'd just love to start off with you talking about the blues, your perception of it, say what it is, how you feel about it, and how you came to play it.
Let me see. Where do I begin with that one? Let me just do this. I started playing music a year after I graduated high school. I was 19 years old, and that was in 1982. That's when I got my first guitar. And a couple of things inspired me to do that. And that was visiting my grandparents' church, which was a sanctified church in Bakersfield, California, which is where I was born, by the way. But anyway, that's visiting my grandparents and going to their church and the music and the intensity of the church and the liveliness of it. Even though I was a young child, it scared the Jesus out of me. But I really appreciated what was going on. It was like a celebration of life. And when I asked my mom, you know, especially when the adults in the church would actually get filled with the Holy Spirit, and there was a lot of dancing, and it was just kind of wild. And you would see grown people acting like this, which really freaked me out, but it intrigued me at the same time. When I asked my mom, why are the grown people acting this way in church? And she told me that when you're Black in America, you need that one day to purge, to get all of that pain out, so that you can function the rest of the week and do what you have to do to make a living for your family. So that was a very interesting answer that she gave me. And I'm only a little kid at the time. The other thing that got me into music was watching the Jackson 5 on Ed Sullivan television show. And as I tell people, it wasn't so much Michael Jackson that impressed me because he was just another little kid, like everybody else in my neighborhood. What impressed me was Tito and Jermaine with these cool outfits, with these big old afros, and they had these guitars. And I said, oh, shoot. Oh, I want to do that. I want to play me a guitar. And because I was just thought that was the coolest looking thing in the world visually. Not really thinking about the music, but just visually. I was just like, that was cool. So as I got older and I didn't start playing, I didn't get my first guitar until I was 19. And I wanted to learn how to play everything. And in order to learn how to play everything, I knew that I had to learn how to play blues first, because we know that's the cornerstone of pop music in our culture. And as time went on, I'm telling the short version of the story. As time went on, as I played different types of music, it would without fail, anytime I would play the blues, that got me the biggest reaction. I said, wow, okay, so I'm gonna just go with that because people are giving me attention when I play the blues. So I figured, let me just go in that direction. And that's how that got started. And as I got deeper into the blues and understanding the culture of the music, that's where I started to really deep dive into what this music means to me as a Black man in America. This is the music that has allowed us to survive and thrive and get through and function. This is the music that allowed us to express our humanity in a society that has done everything in its power to take away our humanity. And we managed to do this magical thing that allowed us to survive and heal. And a funny thing happened. We healed the whole damn world in the process, to the point that everybody stole our music, you know, and made it bigger than we could have made it because we weren't even allowed to. But so the point being is that that's magic right there. That when you have it, when you create an art form to heal yourself, and it's so powerful that it heals everybody else, I wanted to be a part of that. So that's why blues is like this beautiful, amazing thing, because it literally anything contemporary, it has influence all over the world, you know, and unfortunately, a lot of people don't recognize that or don't care to recognize that. You know, that's why Black folks have a saying, they love our art, but they don't love us. You know what I'm saying? That is, you know, in a nutshell, why playing the blues is so important to me, and why when I do play it, I make sure everyone understands who's listening to me. What you're listening to is African American pain and struggle and survival. And it came about out of the necessity to create joy and survival. And so I just want you to know what you're dancing to. So as you're dancing and smiling, having a good time, don't just do that, take it for granted. This is serious. This is Black joy that you are participating in. So I want you to understand that, just like any other art form in the world. So if I were to play Celtic music, I think I need to understand about Scottish and Welsh and Irish culture to give it the proper respect, to give the proper respect to the people who created this music. You know, if I'm going to play mariachi music, I need to understand what that's all about. So that's, in a nutshell, why this blues is so important to me. I hope that answers your question.
It does. And like you said, there's a shortened version there of something that I think has a lot of depth. And I love your bringing up that deep-rooted connection between gospel and blues, because I think a lot of people look at blues and say, oh, yeah, that's, you know, very secular, or it could even be raunchy, or it's played in the bars, and it would be completely separate from gospel. And yet I know from reading and seeing, like, a lot of these artists were preachers as well as blues musicians, and there's a lot of interplay between those two musical genres, because a lot of spirituals became blues songs, and a lot of blues songs would be revised or have those, you know, religious undertones or feeling. There's so much that is powerful there. And I know from reading an interview that you did with Country Blues that you said that Andre Crouch, who is a gospel singer, really influenced you to start singing. And how do you see those connections as important for people to recognize there, and that mentorship between gospel and blues?
The only difference between blues and gospel is Saturday night and Sunday morning. That is literally the only difference. There are some structural differences in the music, of course, but basically, blues is a way of healing you, or a way of helping people survive living in the world. Gospel is a way of helping you understand and survive life by worshiping the spiritual realm. So it's the same thing. You know, you can be spiritual all day long, but you still got to live in the world. You still got to go to work and ride the bus and just deal with folks. And blues helps you on that level. And gospel helps you deal and connect with your spiritual side. So it's just two sides of the same coin. And again, it's black in the sense of black, black art and culture. It's the same thing. Sister Rosetta Thorpe, the great guitar player, Sister Rosetta Thorpe, who inadvertently invented rock and roll by doing things that you're not supposed to do, because let's face it, rock and roll is all about rebellion. Sister Rosetta Thorpe was a black female playing electric guitar in the sanctified church, who also did secular music, who also was queer. Everything you wasn't supposed to be, she was it. And she also influenced a lot of cats, from Little Richard to Pete Townsend, to play this music. Jimi Hendrix said Sister Rosetta Thorpe was one of her favorite guitar players. It's black folks. I mean, I know we get into this thing, 'cause I remember, this whole thing about, oh, that's the devil music and all that. But, we know what we know. Like, we know that's art. We know it's the same thing. I can sit there and play a blues riff and sing about Jesus, and you wouldn't even know the difference, So so for us, the connection is a no-brainer, even though we try to act like, we try to act all whole, how we get into our little bag, like, well, we don't do the devil music. Well, yes, you do, sister. You do. And, and you go to church and they're hooping and hollering and they're dancing. And you go to the juke joint and they're hooping and hollering and dancing. I have a joke in my family that I say, because I have two brothers. I'm the oldest. My youngest brother got his doctorate, his PhD in the Dead Sea Scrolls. So he's a theologian. He's a professor at Baylor University. So he's high up there, but he's also a preacher. He's a minister. He's a pastor. He's not a pastor, but he's a minister. He's ordained. So he preaches from time to time. So he's a minister. I have another brother, the one that's next to me, works with the sheriff department in LA County. So he works in law enforcement. And then my dad was an attorney. So the way we do it like this: if I can't help you at the nightclub on Saturday night because you got problems, and on Sunday morning you go to church and my brother can't help you with his preaching, I guess my other brother's going to have to lock you up and my dad's going to have to get you out. That's how we, that's, and that, and basically this is the same thing. You go to church, you go to you go to the club, you go to the church, and you deal with your problems. Now, if you can't deal with your problems, then of course you got to deal with my brother and my dad. So, yeah.
There's a lot there. I love that. I absolutely love that. And I think when we're talking about it, there is a lot that's cultural. You say, it's important to understand where this music comes from, and that there is a lot of what I immediately call signifying. It's speaking to something, or there's more than one meaning, and you should be able to pick up on that and play off of that meaning to something else, and it will mean different things to different people, but it's about that creative, transgressive, but also really powerful, reinforcing pieces of that music and the cultural tradition that come with those things that stay steady across both musical genres. Like you said, you go to the juke joint Saturday and you show up at church Sunday morning, and there are these cultural pieces that stay across African American culture and community.
See, before we had a name to it, because blues, the name is really just probably a commercial thing to try to make some money and sell some music to sell our music back to us, when they call them race records. But when you think about it, for black folks, it was really no difference. You sang when you was working in the fields, or you sang when you was working in the factory. Now, if you got off work, you sat on your porch and hung out with some friends and had a drink, and you sang and you celebrated and you talked about the things that were going on. And then, and then on Sunday morning, you would go to church and you didn't call it gospel. You just sang. You sang what that was all about. You sang about what it was like going to your job. You sang what it was like dealing with your woman. You sang what it's like talking to the Lord. And it's just kind of, it didn't necessarily, there was no borders. I mean, there were no real borders there. You just expressed your humanity. And that's ultimately what that was. And it wasn't until the marketplace got involved, which basically was another way of saying white folks got involved and said, oh, we can make some money off of this stuff. Not only that, we can do it too and sell it to them. Sam Phillips said, if I can find a white man with a Negro feel, I'll make $1 billion. On the surface, that's a racist statement, but ultimately, I don't think Sam Phillips was being racist. He was a businessman. He was being real, because he loved to record cats like Howlin' Wolf. Sam, of course, I'm sorry, background. Sam Phillips ran Sun Records, which gave birth to Elvis Presley and Carl Perkins and all those cats. But before he was recording Carl Perkins and Johnny Cash and Elvis, he was recording Howlin' Wolf and Ike Turner. The first official rock and roll record was recorded by Jackie Brunson and Rocket 88, and Ike Turner was a part of that. That was considered the first rock and roll record. And a little side note, if you ever listen to that song, Rocket 88, you'll hear a little guitar fuzz on there, like a little distorted guitar. That's because I heard that when they were taking the amp out the car, the amp fell and the speaker busted, but they had to do the gig. And when they're playing the guitar, the paper on the speakers go making a buzz. There you go, rock and roll. You know what I'm saying? So, but anyway, but Sam Phillips, who recorded Howlin' Wolf and Bobby Bland, and I think even B.B. King and Ike Turner and all these cats liked the music, but he was catching a lot of hell from white folks in his community saying, "Why are you recording those? You know what? Why do you bother with those people?" That's what they kept telling him, and it frustrated him because and he knew they liked the music too, but they didn't want to be bothered with the people. And then Elvis shows up, dripping with culture, dripping with African American culture. Elvis grew up in the hood. He hung out at the churches. He snuck into juke joints. He listened to records. He just absorbed the whole culture and regurgitated it back out. Sam Phillips heard and said, "Bingo." And there you go. And he is the king of an art form he didn't invent. So, and there you have it. And it just goes on and on and on and on. Every fiber of Elvis, and again, not taken away from that guy Elvis, because I really feel sorry for him because he's a very tragic figure. He was just a kid who liked music, who was having a good time, who unfortunately got abused by a horrible a manager. But so Elvis himself, he may not have been a bad guy, but the whole thing is all wrapped in racism. Sam Phillips saying, "If I can find a white man with a Negro feel, oh, wait, why do we have to even go that far? Why can't you just have the black man play the music and everybody like it and enjoy it?" So, hope that answers your question.
I agree with you, and I think there is a lot. We have people say, "Oh, do we have to really bring race into it?" But I think, especially with black music, you have to, because it's not that far back that you do have race records and those things are split. You have the country records and you have the blues records, and it is very commercialized. And yet, if we forget all of that, we forget the foundation and history of blues and the way it influences music going forward.
And it's not just music, it's just culture. Do we have to bring race into it? That is the top racist statement to ever have been uttered.
Yes,
It
it
is
is.
like the main one. Because sure, if you say that, it's because you don't have to deal with the crap that I gotta deal with. I walk out of my house every day, I saw on my mind. Every time I go into a store, I gotta worry, say, "Oh, why are they following me? What's going on? Why didn't I follow a white boy over there?" When I drive down the street and I see a police, that's the worst one, because now you gotta get into another bag in your head. You gotta get into this bag in your head. It's like, okay, what's gonna happen? He's following me or they're following me. Doesn't matter, black or white. And that's a whole nother something else we'll get into later. But the worst thing is you driving up a street and the police driving down the street, you look in your mirror and say, "Please, Lord Jesus, don't let this fool turn around." Oh man, a U-turn. Here we go. Here we go. And even if they're going somewhere else, your mind is always on this thing. You go out, you go to the airport. Why is the TSA checking me harder than that dude? Everything, because that has been our reality since 1619, all that kind of stuff. It's just, so it's not just music, because I've done this talk before, and that comes up all the time. Why do you have to bring race into it? Because it's my reality. It's not yours, so you need to listen to me talk about, if you really care, listen to me tell you about my story. Oh, well, then you need to quit whining. Yeah, I'm gonna whine because it hurts. When I whine, don't tell me how to cry. You know what I'm saying? You got a chip on you got a chip on your shoulder. No, that's a foot on my neck. You know what I mean? These are the things that, and I will say this also. You have blues and you have hip hop. Straight line. Straight line. One to the other, because hip hop was born out of the same conditions. Disenfranchised youths trying to seek humanity in a culture that denies them humanity. And they wanted to, those young kids in the Bronx, those brown and black kids wanted to do something positive to heal themselves. So hip hop was born out of that need. It's the same thing. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, no, I was going to say and unfortunately, the marketplace, like with blues, has taken hip hop and taken it into a dark direction and has actually used it as a tool against the black community. And that's really unfortunate. Again, this is what happens. This is what happens. But in the reality, the creation of hip hop was born out of the same conditions that created blues. And I can go down the line. You have blues and gospel, which gave birth, thank you, Sister Rosetta Thorpe, to rock and roll, which is just another form of R&B. R&B is just another form as we move along the line, because we can't do blues anymore because it's been too saturated by all these white cats claiming it. So we're gonna move on to something else called R&B. And then we go, oh, here they come. And then we're gonna do soul music. And we and soul music is, if you think about soul music, it's just blues where African American people are, because if you think about soul music, it's a lot of love songs. So we're trying to connect with each other as partners, you know. In that, of course, in those times it was mainly heterosexual, but the idea is we're trying to connect with our partners. So there's a lot of love songs. We're trying to heal ourselves. And then as time goes along, because that becomes infiltrated, not because of musicians, but because of the marketplace. Then it becomes funk, which is about party, 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 which is important because that's Black joy. But sometimes without that party, 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 you don't realize that something's being done to your head. And then, you know, hip hop comes along. They reach back. They pull some of that old music up to bring back some of that joy. And then as we go along, that gets co-opted and ruined. And on the other side of that, you got cats like the Rolling Stones who are appropriators. And I say appropriation is not necessarily a bad thing. That's just cultural collaboration. It's just a problem when collaborators act like they invented it and take all the money for themselves. But the Rolling Stones, who are cool cats because they admit this is the title of their band is from a Muddy Waters record, but they admit that they are, you know, that blues is influenced. But they're still popular. The Beatles, they admit it, but they're still popular. They're still more popular than anybody else. And then, as again, you know, and then this whole thing we found out about Rolling Stone, the magazine that, you know, the cat that was running it was a racist all along and didn't think much of Black music anyway. You know, it's, man, it's just, it's a, it, yeah, race does matter. It just permeates my existence, I'm sorry to say.
It is a powerful influence in music. If you listen to blues music, anybody listening to blues music has to be aware of how many of these songs have either political undertones or resistance movements within them and are actually songs of protest, songs about that lived and shared experience, because talking about it in that music is a form of release, like you said, a form of healing. You have to talk about these things, share the experience, and validate the fact that it's happening when so many people are saying it doesn't, or not even recognizing how it's affecting entire communities.
Just by expressing your humanity is subversive, being Black. If you go back to a slave plantation, you could not express your true selves because you would be killed. Or not maybe not killed because you were property. They didn't want to kill their property, but you know, your life was going to really suck beyond suck. And you would sing songs on that plantation that didn't say what you really felt, but it, you know, you said what we know what you're saying. You know, we understand what's going to wade in the water. You know, we're not going down to the creek to go swimming. We're getting ready to get up out of here. That's what that's saying. You know, all these codes and all these different things that we live by, you know, language that only we understand. Like I say, just being ourselves can be subversive in this society. The 60s were full of protest music. Well, they cut that mess out. You know, you didn't see that stuff anymore. You had a lot of the music that talked about the reality of different things, and then that got washed away. Even Jimi Hendrix at the end of his life was getting a little more woke about what was going on because he started hanging out with the Panthers and he was really getting into it. And, you know, I'm not trying to be Mr. Conspiracy Theory guy, but he died shortly after that. But hey, you know, life's funny. It's, yeah, being Black and expressing that Blackness makes a lot of people uncomfortable and that becomes subversive. And when you start singing about it, you wake people up. Again, being woke, people become intelligent. They see the situation as it is. They know there's power in numbers. We know we can change this. We can change this, but changing it means somebody's going to lose. I don't want to say lose power, but lose position, you know, to a degree. Yeah, it's interesting. It's really interesting to examine these things and really break them down so that you know what it is. So when you're listening to this music, you have to understand this music was born out of pain. Even though we're singing about happy stuff or feeling good while we're dancing, just understand why you're doing that and where it came from. That's all I ask of anybody. Just like if I listen to something else, I'm gonna go, oh, that's, you know, that's cool. And I want to know what this is and where it came from and all that kind of stuff. My worst feeling is when I do a blues festival and I'm the only Black artist on the bill. It's like, come on. You know what I'm saying?
I think that there is a lot of innovation in blues from Black artists. And often, like you said, the blues space is being more and more flooded with white blues artists. And yet there are Black blues artists that are doing a lot of innovating. And I would say you do a lot of innovating with your music. It has a very distinct sound. You call it Fatback, which I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about, but also including, say, what experiences are you trying to convey through your music? What are your hopes that people understand or get from your music?
Well, when I play, it becomes a struggle because I have to figure out what I'm doing. What am I doing here? Okay, last night, I was playing last night. I have a monthly thing called the Brother Yusuf Blues Dance Party here in LA. When I'm playing, I got to ask myself, what am I doing here? And that's when I just play and people are dancing, I get lost and I have to kind of redirect myself. What am I doing here? I'm not communicating with the ancestors. I'm not going about this properly. So once I get my head in that space, then the music starts to flow. I'll write a set list out and I'll try to play the songs exactly. No. The spirits don't want that. We did that yesterday. We're doing this now. What are we doing now? Okay, we're doing this. We're going in this direction. Oh, yeah. And then you start to see the thing rise up, the emotion rise. The laughter gets louder. More people come on the floor. And what I love about doing this blues dance party that I do is we do it in a bar, which means that people who are not part of the dance community can also come in the dance floor and dance and not feel intimidated. That's always been my, and I'm sorry, blues dance people, I love you guys to death because you guys have really done a lot for me. But man, I got some issues with y'all. I heard somebody say, yeah, we went to a bar and there were a lot of non-dancers there. I'm like, for real? First of all, this is a white dude. I'm like, no, you don't know. I didn't say that to him, but it was very interesting, that perspective. It's one thing to get in your spaces and do your thing and say, oh, we dance blues. It's another thing to put it out in the community and do your thing and invite everybody else in the community and do their thing together. And that's always been a thing with me. That's why I made it a point that if I'm gonna do this thing, it's gonna be at a bar where regular folks come and say, I can't dance. Yes, you can. Get out there. Just move your do your I can't dance either. I got out there a couple of times, made a fool of myself. You just do what you do. And it's okay to do the things you learn in the classes. That's okay too. We need all of that. It's a funny thing I tell people. They always say, Brother Yusuf, I'm doing a workshop. Will you want to do that? I don't think you want me in the workshop because I'm going to deconstruct everything you're doing. I'm going to tear it apart. Somebody once said at a workshop, so let me get this right. Do I come in on the 4 or the 8? And I said, I don't know. Come in on the 7. Just come on in. What they said again, and I love the dance world, because I think what I appreciate about the dance world is lately there has really been an interest in understanding the music, the stuff that I'm talking about. There seems to be a real, genuine, honest, come on, I'm doing a lecture in Austria one time, full of people. They want to understand and I appreciate that. We need that. That's what I want. I want people to understand this stuff so they can spread it around, in the world beyond. So anyway, that was more than that. I just get off on a tangent. I'm sorry.
No, it's a great tangent because I think there are a couple points that I'd love to drive home, which is that this music is born in bars and in spaces that aren't dance halls. And so to say, oh, we need a specific dance space. No, we don't. We need to be going to support live musicians and these venues and bars where they're asking live musicians to perform live because that is where the heart of this music is in community. And certainly the blues dance community is its own type of community, like you said, but I think we lose out on important cultural pieces and knowledge and having opportunities to learn from those people and enjoy the atmosphere is,
Yeah.
we're missing something if we don't have that.
You're right. And there's a flavor and there's a smell. That's what going now, the thing about fatback blues, for those of you who don't know what fatback is, if you're from the South, you know what it is. Think about good Southern cooking. Now, I'm a vegan, so let me just indulge for a minute. I'm gonna get off my vegan pedestal. But we know that good Southern cooking with all that fatback, salt pork, all that stuff that's not good for your body. But probably good for your soul. And fatback is basically salt pork. It's a flavor. So one time I was performing at a I was in a jam session with these guys at a bar down in I'm in Pasadena area, and we were jamming. And after we went on a break, we were getting ready to go on a break, and the drummer, who happened to be a white dude from Louisiana, looked up at me and said, "Man, Yusuf, you got that fatback sound." And I said, "Yeah, man, I like that. I like that." So I started using that term. But this is a fatback blues. My style is very unique. I don't have my guitar. I still in the car because I was playing last night. It's a sound that I inadvertently created because I was playing with groups. But I wasn't quite, I couldn't, you know, I wasn't quite getting the sound I wanted, because I not only do I listen to a lot of blues, but I grew up in the 70s. So my whole thing was Ray James and Parliament and all the music of that era. So funk was really kind of like my backbone in my soul, Bootsy, that really hard, funky, edgy, in your face beat. I noticed as I was playing, I was trying to go in that direction. So it's like a harder edge, like in blues. And I was able to, and I was found that I was finding that I was able to do it by myself. I was really getting that sound really with that strong pocket, That's what I heard in my head. I heard that drum, that hard hit, that stomp on the floor, which would be like a bass drum, but I hit on the floor with my foot. And I just created this sound where people say I sound like a full band. People call me a one-man band, which I don't want to be called that anymore. I got into a pretty heavy discussion with Bobby Rush about that one. He said, "Why are you going to be a one-man band? Just get a band." I was trying to explain to what I was doing. And I realized afterward, I guess we got caught up on the word one-man band. I'm a solo artist who happens to bring the vibe of a full band with a style of music that I call fatback blues. So when you think of fatback, just think of that good southern down-home cooking. That's just, make you want to, as they say, slap your mama, that kind of thing. That's what fatback.
It's a powerful, full sound, and I had never thought about that differentiation between solo artist and one-man band, but I can, now that you say that, I can see how that could cause some controversy depending on the perception of
Yeah.
what that means.
I felt bad because I really wasn't arguing with Bobby Rush. I was trying to, because people were telling him about me and he was really having a problem with it. Why just get a band? What are you doing? I'm like, oh God, now I got this legend pissed off at me. That's all I need. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, he was cool. It was cool. But after a while, I said, wait a minute. Okay, I'm approaching this wrong. So I'm not a one man band. I'm a solo act who likes it, who prefers it that way. I play with a band and I had a band, but I've always felt at home. I felt free because I never, I guess I never, I guess I can say I don't work well with others sometimes. So, because I remember I used to have gigs with my band and then I would have gigs by myself. And it was a very hard transition because when I'm playing by myself, my rhythm is all over the place. It's just flowing. When I play with a band, I'm locked into this thing and it's like the drummer's like, "You're speeding up, you're speeding up." I'm like, "Oh, you're going too slow. Come on, keep up." So I like the free. Not only did I grow up listening to Parliament, Rick James, and the edgy funk of the day, Lakeside, I also started digging off Coltrane with this free flow of like water, just this music that's just moving and going in whatever direction the cat who's playing or singing feels like. So I can go off like I do right now when I'm talking. I go off on a tangent. When I play, I go off on little tangents. And I do stuff. I love this part. This is funny. When I do a lot of dances and I tell the dancers, if I see too much routine and you guys aren't paying attention to what I'm doing, I'm going to mess with you. I'm going to speed up and slow down. And I'm going to do all kinds of things to throw you off your game and get out of your head and let the music flow and hit you the way it's supposed to. When I see somebody in the corner doing something that everybody else is not doing, then I focus on that person and I feel the vibe of that person and we got a thing going. And hopefully that becomes infectious. This happens to me a lot in Korea. I go to Korea every year because Korea has the biggest swing scene in the world. So I do blues dance events and swing events in Korea. There's a lot of freedom in whenever I'm on stage. I don't see that much routine. I just see goofing off and dancing. I'm really pleased with that. I like that they get it. Recently, I talked to a friend of mine from Korea, and she was telling me that I thought this was really cool because I was talking to her about blues and blues culture. And she said, "You know what? You said I've been taking a class about. They were talking about civil rights and stuff like that because I remember you told me about that, and I wanted to understand what that's about." She said, "Wow!" I said, "Ah, now you're getting it. Now you're getting it. I want that." I don't want you guys just to dance with this music mindlessly. I want you to understand what it is.
The
Yeah,
power
that's
of
me.
improvisation to bring inspiration to look through all of the history and learn about it. I think that's a powerful message, is if you're enjoying that and you're able to see the power of the music, learn what creates that power of the music.
And it's for everybody. Even though it was invented, even though it came out of the African American experience, it's for everybody. Just all I ask of the world is just acknowledge, really acknowledge where this, not just blues, but just acknowledge where a lot of the music came from. I recently saw this, how we have these top 100 greatest artists of all time. It was a Rolling Stone. They narrowed it down to 10 artists. Top 10, top artists from Rolling Stone. Number 10 on the list, Ray Charles. Oh, what? We started upside down here. Ray Charles, number 9, James Brown. I said, whoa. As soon as we hit 5, boom, Rolling Stones. Eric Clapton, Elvis, the Beatles. I'm like, how in the world are the appropriators over the innovators and creators? That's a problem. That's a big problem in our culture. That can't be. That doesn't mean that white guys are not innovators and creators, but how do you put them above the actual innovators and creators? That's Elvis. Elvis stole from everybody on the list before. So did the Beatles and the Stones and Clapton. Aretha Franklin, number six? Are you kidding? All of those guys should be number one. And then you start from 10 spaces and then you go, you know? And as I was watching the list countdown, okay, I see where this is headed. And sure enough, boom, Eric Clapton. I'm like, and then da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Now someone say, what's the big deal? It's just music. It's not white and black. It's just blues, you know, and all this kind of stuff. Well, you know, I know. I mean, we are, I don't know if we've seen that. We've seen that video, that interview with Ray Charles when he was asked about Elvis. And he basically said, well, I guess I'm about to lose a bunch of fans. And he said, I don't see what the big deal is. You know, he's just copying us. So I don't hear it. And Ray Charles knows. It's a drag when someone takes something from you. And you know it was taken from you, but everyone around you telling you, no, they didn't. They didn't take it from you. It looks different. No, they just painted it, changed it around a little bit, but still mine, you know. I was doing a performance at a festival and I was talking to everybody. After my performance, everyone really liked what I was saying, but one young lady walked up to me and she said, you know what? I love what you're saying, but the guy behind me was getting upset. He just wanted you to shut up and play. You know, shut up and play. Shut up and dribble. You know, we don't have an opinion that they want you. And I'm said, oh, I'm glad I didn't hear him say it because I probably would have went off, and that probably wouldn't have been good for my business. But you know, it's hard when you know what you know and you're getting gaslighted up and down the road, and then you know, and nothing you can do about it. So you know, that's hard. That's why race matters in all
I would,
things.
yes, I 100% agree with you in that. You know, I think we could sit and talk
Yeah,
about this
I
for over an hour, I think, easy. We could just continue on and on, but we are running a little low on time. But I do just want to end with, you know, if there's one thing that you feel is the most important thing that my listeners walk away with in understanding about the blues, what would that be? What would you like them to walk away with?
practice justice, whether you're dancing or dealing with people on regular, when you're on the bus or the train or wherever you're going, just as just a human being, practice justice and recognize other people's humanities. Do not play that other's game. When I play the music and everyone's dancing, no matter what color, whatever they are, if we're just in harmony and we're understanding where everybody's coming from. And what I mean by that is again, as long as you don't say nothing, then it's cool. But when you say something, I don't like you. That's not cool. I think that I'd say, if I have time real quick, just a real funny, interesting story I had. I was on an airplane coming from England, flying across continental United States. I'm sitting this lady talking and we were connecting. And then suddenly politics came up and come to find out she was a Trump supporting MAGA again. You know, and I looked at my wife like, oh, 9 hours left, huh? And I couldn't just sit with this lady and ignore her. I had to recognize her humanity. So we talked, and we talked about what we felt. And I said, well, this is how I approach it. And I listened. And I think by her listening, she may have appreciated that. So we were able to agree. I mean, we were able to disagree. I don't mean agree to disagree because I don't believe in that. I think you should disagree, keep the conversation open. And we were able to do that, and we had a pleasant journey over the continental United States, over North America. And so that's what is needed in this world. And my method is through the music. Other people's is through art. Other people's is, you know, you could be working in hospitality at a hotel. Just be cool with everybody, you know.
I think that's
That's my
a
method.
perfect message to conclude. So thank you again for taking the time to be on the podcast.
Thank you for listening to me.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to click the subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts so you always catch the latest episodes. 12 Bar Talk is hosted, recorded, and produced by me, Dr. Chelsea Adams, and supported by Salt City Blues, LLC, a blues dance event company located in Salt Lake City, Utah.